Thanks, Brent.
Wow, these are bright lights. I can't see you. Well, thanks, Dan, for that introduction. Actually, I'm going to tell you, of all the hats I wear, one that I'm actually really proud of is I'm the president of the Dan Kopp Fan Club. And I'm not kidding. I mean, I think I might be the only member, but I got an opportunity right now, before we dive into the scripture tonight, to tell you a little bit about Dan, because those of you that are that came just to hear me, thank you. It's great to see friends, and I don't get back to Michigan that often to do this, so just to get hugs and greetings tonight is really cool. But those of you that have come with Dan to start this new church, I just want to say what you already know, but just to confirm that, you know, I had the privilege of working with Dan when he was in seminary. He was an intern working with me. And as Dan said, we connected. And what I connected with is what you know about Dan, but this is a man of incredible integrity, love for God. I would trust Dan with anything. And a love for the scriptures. And I think really, and I'm not trying to build your ego up, but he has a brilliant mind. I think he's way smarter than I am. As he grew and got out of seminary and began to work, I would go to Dan with my questions, because if Dan didn't know, he knew how to research. He'd have the answer like in 5 seconds, you know, or I'd go back to my office and there'd already be an email by the time I'd walk there. So he just loves to learn, and he loves to teach, and he has a heart for God and a heart for people. And Dan, you can confirm this is true. I've been nudging Dan to do this for a while. Even before I left for New York, I just really felt like Dan, that God's call was on Dan's life to be a lead pastor and to lead a church. And so, you know, I was so excited from New York to watch this begin to develop, and I would come back to town and try to connect with Dan, and he'd pick me up at the airport, and at least we could talk for an hour as we were driving back to Troy, that I really believe in God's call on Dan's life. And I'm so thankful that many of you who are friends with me as well have decided to support Dan and Kelly in this work, and, you know, volunteering and help, and pitching in and writing checks and really launching this church. I think it's going to be an incredible ministry in Macomb County. So, Dan, way to go. Way to go, guys. I'm just so thankful for this. You know, you forgot to mention that I also was the pastor that married you and Kelly. You guys are doing okay, aren't you? All right? Still doing okay? All right. Well, I want to, as Dan said, jump into, when I have a chance to teach and it's not like in a series or something, what I always prefer to do is to look where God is really working in my life and challenging me, making me uncomfortable, pressing me, convicting me, because I feel like when I can share whatever, what I'm going to share with integrity. Like, this is a message for me right now where God is pressing into my life, and maybe you can benefit from that as we talk about it. So Matthew chapter 14, I think they're probably going to put it up on the screen, but if you have a Bible and you want to turn there, it's a real familiar story. And I was telling someone in the lobby when they came in tonight that I've probably taught on this passage 10 times. I probably taught it in New Community back at Kensington 2 or 3 times. But, you know, Scripture has this ability, when you keep reading it, there's a different nuance that grabs you and something different that you see, and a different conviction that you get. And the Holy Spirit's able to work a passage with where you are at this stage in your life. And so it's a very familiar story of where Peter gets out of the boat and walks on water. John Ortberg wrote a great book on it. And John Ortberg is such a great teacher. Like, how can you ever add to what John wrote about it? But I found something different this time about 2 months ago when I was reading through Matthew. And so that's what I want to share with you tonight. And really ask that God would open up his word to us, and really ask that God would open up our hearts to receive what he wants to say. Because, I don't know, there's a couple hundred people, 300 people here maybe tonight, and most of you, I don't know your story, and I don't know your journey, and I don't know where you're at, and I don't know what you need to hear from God tonight, and I don't know what he's already saying to you. But I believe that this passage can meet every single one of you individually. That's the power of Scripture. It is profitable to all of us. And so that's my prayer as we dive into this tonight. Now, context is Jesus has just done this amazing miracle. He's multiplied a few loaves and some fish and fed thousands of people. And it's been a long day, and they're tired. And so the disciples get out in a boat, and they're going to head out into the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus decides to do what he often does, which is to pray. And a very interesting event unfolds. So let's go ahead and look at this. Looking at verse 22, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It is a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" Now, I want you to consider for a moment, of all the experiences that Jesus had, you know, if you go to the Gospel of John, Luke, said if everything that was ever, that Jesus did, if all of it was written, all the books couldn't contain it. So that tells you that while there were human authors remembering their stories, and it's clear why Matthew would choose this story, right? Because he witnessed this. He was one of the 11 that stayed in the boat and saw stupid Peter get out of the boat and, you know, do this. And so, you know, he's going to write that story down. But the question you should ask yourself is, why did the Holy Spirit prompt Matthew to include this story? Like, what's the significance of this story? It is a really cool story. It's a really cool miracle. And if you're a skeptic, it's one of the stories you think, nah, that didn't happen. They just made that up. Nobody walks on water. But the question is, why, from God's point of view, did he include this story? For me, it's become a very, very powerful, very personal story in my life. Especially if you pay attention not to the circumstances, but to the conversation. And that's what we're going to look at tonight. There's a conversation in this story. Because I'm pretty sure that probably none of us will ever be called to get out of a boat and walk on water. So you don't read the story and say, "I'm going to have to file that away. Next time I'm out in, you know, the middle of the lake somewhere, you know, I'm going to try this one out." I don't recommend that. But the conversation it's between Jesus and Peter, and it starts with Peter in the boat, and then it continues as Peter's out of the boat in the water. That conversation, I believe, has application to every single one of us, and probably to everyone right now in your life. And so that's what I want to have happen tonight. I want you to have a conversation with Jesus. It's the same as the one he has with Peter, but I want you to contextualize it in your circumstances. What are your circumstances? Unemployed, underemployed, in a relationship difficulty, have to make an important decision? I don't know what it is, but there's something in your life where you need this conversation with Jesus, and he wants to have it with you, and that's what I hope happens in the next few moments. So, as he's out on the water, Jesus is walking toward them. They see him, and they think it's a ghost. So there's only a few sentences in this conversation, by the way, and then it ends with a question. The first sentence is this. As they're screaming, you know, they're seeing a ghost, and they're screaming, because that would be pretty frightening, right? It's dark out, enough light to see someone walking. You're way offshore. There's not supposed to be a body out there. He's upright. He's walking. They're terrified. I understand that. Here's what Jesus says. He says just a few things. He says, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Those are really important words for this reason. I don't know if you've discovered this yet, but life is terrifying. Where's Tony? Tony, raise your hand. I heard through the grapevine that Tony's got some physical problems, pretty serious, right? It's terrifying to go to a doctor and get a diagnosis and to have an uncertain certainty about it. Probably some of you here, if I ask you to raise your hand, and I won't, you've been out of work for a while. In fact, a good friend of mine yesterday, they lost their house and they had to move out. Life is difficult. Life is frightening. Life can be terrifying. Life is not for the faint-hearted. And it's also not for the person who says, "I can do it." It's not for the person who is independent and is going to find her strength or his strength in their own. And so the dialogue begins. Peter's still in the boat. It's a storm. So, but they're fishermen mostly, so they're used to storms, but they're probably a little bit of fear there. You know, they're buffeted by the wind and the waves, and they're trying to make their way across the lake, and then they see a guy walking on water, and they're terrified. And I love these words again. Take courage. Why should we take courage? It is I. Who is it? It's Jesus. So I would just encourage you in the context of your life right now to imagine that Jesus tonight wants to say to you, whatever you're facing, he wants to say, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Take courage, Jesus is present, you don't need to be afraid. We need to hear this, we need to embrace this, we need to believe this, we need to know that he is there for us. We need to know that his eye is on us, that we're not alone in the storm, especially in the storms of life, that we can find courage and freedom and we can be freed from the grip of fear. I think if life has taught me anything, it's that courage, true courage for life can only be found in him. I can muster it up for a while. I can convince myself. I can have positive thoughts and, you know, just try to dig deep and find it, but eventually it wears me down. Life just wears me down. It's overwhelming. It's too much. You know, even in just my little sphere of my family, the things that I get concerned about and worry about, and then, you know, the church that we're pastoring in New York City, the weight of what's going on in people's lives there, and then the uncertainty about the future and all kinds of things. It's like I find myself more and more, and as I get older, you think I might get stronger and more independent. I feel weaker. I feel more desperate. I feel more in need to hear the voice of Jesus that says, Craig, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. And, you know, when I saw you, Tony, in the back today and gave you a hug and said, I've been praying, I heard about it, you know, what I wanted to say to you, but I thought, I'll say it in the message. So I'm going to say it to you in front of all these people. It's coming from Craig, but this is from Jesus. He says, Tony, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. And if I had the ability to know all of your names in your lives right now, I would like to end the message here and say that to each of you. I'm just praying the Holy Spirit will say that to you where you are in your life, in the context of your life. We need Jesus. We need to find courage. Now, this is where the story, though, gets really crazy. And wherever Peter's around, things get crazy. I don't know if they took courage when they heard it was Jesus. I don't know if their fear went away. The only thing that Matthew tells us is what was going on in Peter's mind, and you never had to guess because he always spoke it. So Peter was one of those guys, and you have people in your life like that that you don't need to wonder what they're thinking. They tell you what they're thinking. So Peter's the first one to speak, the only one to speak as far as we know, and here's what he actually says. He doesn't say, oh, good, I'm glad to hear that. Shoo, we were afraid. Thank you. Come on, Jesus, get in the boat. He actually says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come on the water to you. So you talk about courage, like, wow, that's like ridiculous. He's not only not afraid, but he has so much faith that if it really is Jesus, he knows that he can do what Jesus is doing. So he asked Jesus, you know, if it's you, then tell me to come on the water. And Jesus replies, so you're getting the conversation now. Don't be afraid. Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Well, if it is you, tell me to come on the water. And Jesus says one word, answer, come. Now here I want to hit the pause button again, and I want to ask you in the context of your life, is Jesus saying come to you? Is he saying come to you? Have you heard that invitation? Dan, he said come. You going to stay in a secure place or are you going to come? A few years ago, he said, to my wife first, come to New York City. And then my wife said, what do you think about that? And I said, I don't think that's God. But I had to hear it for myself. And he did. It's a dangerous word. It's the most important word because there's certain things you will only learn when you not only hear that word, but you do it. Where is he saying come to you right now? Well, Peter had so much faith that he's going to respond to this in a positive way. And, you know, it's interesting. I love to sail in boats. I don't get to do it much anymore, but I've been out in some pretty wild storms in the Great Lakes. I've been in huge waves, lightning storms. The Sea of Galilee, because of the geography, had a very unique situation where it would get really hot during the day, and it was surrounded by real high hills, almost mountains. And what would happen is as evening would come, the air would cool, the hot air off over the lake would rise, and the cool air would rush down from the mountains. So it was very common to have very sudden squalls or storms that would come up, and that's probably what they're in. They're in one of these. So they're in this storm, and Peter, you got to actually picture this actually happening. I don't know if you, in your mind's eye, you can see this, but when Jesus says, come, I see Peter going over to the side of the boat. Now imagine this. He puts one leg over, and I imagine when he gets here, he looks back, and the disciples are all going like, you got to be kidding me. There's at least 11 guys there that think he's certifiable. He's going to actually step over the side and actually get into the water. You got to be kidding. And I think they were all probably, at that point, they were making bets whether how fast he would sink, to the bottom of the sea. But he actually does it. He actually gets over the side of the boat and begins to walk toward Jesus. Now, when I've heard messages on this and read stories, and I'm sure I've preached this before, much is often made in this story of Peter's failure. But think about it. He got out of the boat. That's what Ortberg is trying to say in his book. The title was, if you want to walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. Here's this man of amazing faith who is willing to actually step over the side of the boat into the water that normally you sink or swim, you don't walk on. And he actually does it. And there's 11 people in the boat that are just sitting there, and they're just watching this. Now, I think what happens next, the fear that he begins to feel as he's actually in the water, and the fact that he begins to sink, is the best thing that ever happened for Peter. And he never would have experienced it if he had stayed in the boat. The best thing that happened to Peter was not walking on water, it was beginning to sink. It was the fear that came back to him, and I'll explain why. I think for us, it's the most important lesson in this passage, and this is what God's been teaching me right now. So here's the next, in the dialogue now, we're listening in. Over the howl of the wind, there's this conversation going on. And it's why I think the Holy Spirit put this in Matthew for us. He says, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come on the water to you. Come. So he begins to walk toward him. We see in the passage that it says that Peter saw the wind, which means you don't see wind, but he felt the wind and he saw the effects of the wind and he began to fear. What's going on here? Well, here's the question I've been asking myself. I want you to think about this. What do you think Peter expected it to be like when he got out of the boat? What was he expecting? Nobody knows what it's like to walk on water when it's really rough out there, except for Peter and Jesus. I wonder what it was like. I wonder what he expected. Peter had already witnessed once when Jesus said, be still, and the waves went flat and the wind died down instantly. Maybe that's what he expected. But from all that we know, we can tell from the story, the storm was still raging, and there was strong wind and there were waves. So what was that like? Over the side, going over the side of the boat, lowering himself in, that first kind of tentative step. Well, if it's rough, I've been wondering, maybe your mind doesn't work this way, but like, so was the surface of whatever he was walking on flat? And then the waves were like coming up around him and then subsiding? Or was he walking up one wave and down the next? Well, in either case, it seems kind of crazy, right? If it's flat and you're walking, then the waves are coming up and you're getting water in your eyes and your hair is flying and it's like you're still in the storm and it's got to be a little unnerving. And I think if you're walking up and down the waves, that's worse. Like you're going to lose your balance, Whatever it was like, though, it wasn't what he expected. He expected something different than what his experience was. So can you see where this is going? God says, don't be afraid. Take courage. It's I. Come, and you obey. And then what happens? It's all fun and games. It's all smooth. It's all perfection. There's no worry. It's no worries. It's perfect. That's not been my experience. My experience has been often in obedience, things seem out of control. Things can seem very difficult. Even to the point of making me doubt, did I really hear you say, come? Did I mishear you? It's funny, I spent some time with Dave Nelson this weekend. Dave is another pastor at Kensington that was sent out years ago to plant a church in Salt Lake City. And he's back also this weekend to teach at Kensington. And we spent a couple hours in a coffee shop yesterday, and he told stories that make your hair stand up in terms of what he's experienced going out to Salt Lake City to start this church. I remember when Dave came to me the first time and said, I think God's inviting me to go to Salt Lake City. And he really felt Jesus said, come. I want you to come. And so here Dave Nelson and a group of people climbed over to the side of the boat and began to walk towards Salt Lake City. And in this journey to Salt Lake City, they found that it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. Things were hard. Things were difficult. There was failure. There was criticism. There were financial distresses. There were issues all over the place. But Jesus, you said, come. How come this isn't working? And I would just, word of exhortation to all of you that are part of Eastside Vineyard Church, I would say, you're out of the boat right now. You're out of the boat. What are you expecting? Smooth sailing? Things to go perfectly? No reason ever for fear? Well, Peter was experiencing something that different than what he thought. The wind was still raging. What's going on here? And then the most important words in this conversation now. Only three words. As he began to sink, what did he say? Someone say it. Awesome. Lord, save me. Lord, save me. Are you saying that? Have you said that? Do you need to say that today? This is why I said the best thing that ever happened to Peter was he began to sink. I don't know what he thought when he's walking on water, If it had just been a cakewalk, he would have come back and he'd probably been boasting to the other disciples. You chickens, this is great. I went out there. I got all this faith. I did this. When he sunk, he realized he was in trouble. And he prayed the most important prayer you can ever pray. Why is it the most important prayer? Because it's when you come to the end of yourself. You come to the end of your resources, your ability, your strength, your courage, it's all gone, and you can do nothing except cry out to God, Lord, save me. Lord, save me. And what happens is Jesus, we're told, reaches down and grabs onto him and pulls him up. Do you long for that strong hand of God in your life? Do you? Do you long to feel that strength that's not your own strength? Do you long to feel that embrace, that rescue from God? Do you long for that? Do you need that in your life? The only time you ever discover that, the only time you ever experience that, is if you put yourself in a position where you need it. If Peter had stayed in the boat and lived his life that way, it could have been a great life. It would have been an amazing life. He was living an amazing life, but he never would have gotten to the point where he got to the end of himself, where he could truly experience the power of God. The only place we can ever truly experience the power of God is when we are in our weakest moment, where we can't say anything else. And I will tell you, since I've been in New York and actually, my work in India, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute, I've gotten to the place where all I could say, you can read my journal and see it, where all I could say was, Lord, save me. I don't know what to do. I'm going to drown if you don't save me. I think God longs for all of us to get to that place. Paul in 2 Corinthians talked about the fact that in his weakness is where he experienced the strength of God. It's in your weakness that you experience the strength of God. And you know where your weakness gets exposed? When you are willing to follow God radically and you are willing to take risk. If all the numbers have to all add up and it has to all make sense and you have to lay out a plan and you know exactly how it's going to go, then you don't need God because you got it all figured out. But when Jesus says come and you get out of the boat and you take that risk, you will get to the end of yourself. I promise you, you will get to the end of yourself. And in that moment, you have the opportunity to say to him, Lord, save me, and to feel his hand reach down and pull you up. So is he saying, come to you? Is he inviting you to get out of the boat? Is there some nudge that you've been resisting? Has fear been keeping you back? And maybe you're missing out on what would be a great life and a great experience if you would respond to him. And then as your weakness is exposed, as your inabilities are exposed, you have the opportunity to feel his strong hand pull you and rescue you. It's only in that place that we will cry out to Jesus for help. You know, getting out of the boat, when I was a kid, they used, you know, Sunday school, they'd tell the story, and it was always, you know, so exhilarating to think about it, right? The little flannel graph things that we did. I don't even think they make flannel graphs anymore. We got computers, stuff that we can do. But, you know, it was so exhilarating to think about him walking on water. But the truth is, what Peter experienced is that following God is harder than you think. I'm really worried sometimes that there's a new version of the prosperity gospel. You know, I don't know if you know what that means, but the prosperity gospel is the guy you hear on TV that says, just write us a check, even though you're broke, and I'll bless your check, and you'll get 10 times more back. God's going to bless you. And so he wants you to prosper. He doesn't want you to be poor. There's another version, I think, of the prosperity gospel that says, if you give your life to Christ and you follow him, it's all going to be great. You know, I think John 10:10 is a great verse. Often we only quote the second half of it. Jesus said, I came to give you that you would have life and have it to the full. Or I came that you would have abundant life. The first half of that verse says, the enemy came to kill, rob, and destroy. But I came that you would have life. This tells us that life is lived out in the middle of a battle. A battle that is being waged around us all the time. To follow Jesus does not mean that life is going to be easy. It doesn't mean that you won't get cancer, you won't lose your job, you won't lose your house, you won't have a relationship that breaks up, you won't have a child that wanders away from God and from you, that you'll never be sick, that you'll ever take a risk and it won't turn out well. It doesn't mean any of that. What it means is that as you walk through life, as I walk through life, in obedience to Jesus, that at any moment we can cry out to him, Lord, save me, and be assured that his hand will be there. That we will find courage in him, that we will find strength in him, that he will rescue us. And so I asked myself as I thought on this passage, what are my expectations for life? What are my expectations? What were my expectations when I moved to New York almost three years ago? And they sure got exposed pretty quickly. It was much harder than I thought. The adjustment was more difficult. I struggled with depression. I wasn't filling up a room like this. I'm still not. What was I expecting? And you know, and I can work really hard. I can really pour myself into something, and I did all of that. If I'd stayed back in Michigan, I never would have experienced, though, truly getting to the end of myself. I don't know if I'm at the end of myself yet. You probably never get to the end of yourself completely. But I know that I've gotten repeatedly to places now where I literally sit before God and just say, Lord, save me. And I can tell you, he saves you. He gives you peace. He gives you rest at night. He gives you a new day. He gives you hope. He gives you optimism. He gives you friends. He gives you community. It's mystical what he does. I can't even explain it. There's things that I've experienced in the last few years that in my whole life, and I've been following Jesus a lot of years, I've never experienced because I never asked him for it. I never needed it. When I say, Lord, save me, he does. He saves me. He continues to save me. Some of you here at Eastside Vineyard were with me in India just a couple weeks ago. Greg and Jessica Gortat and Jeanette Wheeler and a bunch of other people, there were 20-some of us there in India. And I want to kind of illustrate what I'm teaching tonight with a personal story that relates to India. Am I supposed to be done yet, Dan? A little bit longer? Okay. I can go through this pretty quickly. And those of you that were in India, you heard a little bit of this when I was there. But I want to tell you that in the year 2000, which is just over 10 years ago, I made my first trip to India. And a whole lot of things happened in my heart when I was there, but there was one story that I didn't recall for a long time, and when I was there this year, I remembered it. There was a road that we were walking down. Let's see if, do we have that? We were walking down this road in Dalaswaram, India, and I had my daughter with me, who was 10 years old. Steve Andrews and two of his daughters were with us. And we were praying for a piece of property that God would give it to us. And we did that, and then we continued to walk down this road. And just a little farther down from where this picture was taken, there was a little home, and they're really like thatched roof huts, dirt floor. And there was a woman laying on a stretcher almost outside of this home. And I kind of, she caught my attention because she looked horrible, looked really sick. She was like a skeleton. And she looked like she was dead. So I asked Jaya, our host who lived there, I said, who is this? And he said, oh, she's a woman in the neighborhood. She's really, really ill. She's really, really sick, and she's going to die. So I said, well, can anything be done? And he said, there's nothing that can be done. She can't go to a doctor or hospital, and there's nothing we can do. Well, you can pray for her if you want. So I went over, and I put my hand on her arm. I can still remember it was like a bone, like just skeleton. And I put my hand on her arm, and I just prayed, you know, God, just heal her. You know, please heal her. Give her life. And we walked away. Well, I went back to where I was staying that night, just a little ways down the road, and I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking of this woman. And the thing that bothered me was that she couldn't get medical care. Maybe she's got some disease that's going to kill her, even with the best doctors, but how do we know that? What if it's just an infection that could be fought off with an antibiotic? And all these thoughts are going through my mind, and I can't get them out of my mind, and I'm bothered by them. And so in the morning, I get up, and I wasn't supposed to do this, but I had a bottle of antibiotics I brought with me, and I snuck out of Jaya's house, and I walked down this road. I'm going to go find this woman, and I'm going to figure, you can't kill her. Maybe it'll help her. And I don't know how to speak Telugu, and she's not going to speak English, so I don't even know how we're going to do this. But somehow I'm going to get these pills in her, you know? That's what I'm thinking. So I get almost down to this woman, and someone had noticed I left the house, and so they come running after me. And right before I got there, they stopped me, and they said, what are you doing? And I said, I got to help this woman. I got to give her medicine. And they said, you can't do that. Your heart's good, but you can't do that. Why can't I do that? Well, she's probably going to die even with the antibiotic, and if she does, they're going to say you killed her. They're going to say you came and brought her pills, and she took them, and now she's dead. And everybody's going to be in a whole lot of trouble, so you can't do this. And so I had to walk away, and I came back to Michigan, and about 3 weeks later, I got an email from Jaya saying that she had passed away. And I think, looking back, that was the seed that Jesus put in my heart, that we need to do something about this. We were building an orphanage and doing all that, but what about medicine? And so we began small with bringing doctors and nurses over there. Maggie's here, and she's been many times as a nurse to help us. And we formed a medical clinic that was open 24 hours. They couldn't do very much, but they did a little bit. We began to dream about a hospital. Now, just pause right there. As this began to start, there's several things you need to know about me. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't know how to raise money. I'm not a guy that dreams big dreams and then I can lead a team to get it done. That's just not the way I'm wired. So, but this began to feel like God was nudging me. And so in a sense, I basically said, Jesus, if it's you, do you want me to get out of the boat and do this? And I heard him say, come. And so a group of us formed a 501c3 to raise money, and we began to just do what we could do. And we began to see little by little, God begin to do something. And so when I was there, oh, just 2 weeks ago, go to the next slide. This field right here was another piece of property that we had looked at, and those are some boys playing cricket, and I used to go. Dee Dee, you're here too. You remember when the boys used to play cricket there? And so God, you know, we began to pray about buying that property. We had no money, but we feel like you want us to buy this property, and so we bought it. And over the next several years, we built on it, and the next slide will show you what I saw 2 weeks ago. This is the hospital that's on that piece of land. That's an applause. God is amazing what he can do. So that's that same road that I showed you. It's on that road where that woman was. This totally blindsided me. So when I was there, we opened up the hospital. They asked me to be the first patient. I was actually sick, but it was kind of a ceremonial thing. And it didn't start out well because I went up to the counter and they checked me in. You know, they took my name and you know, whatever. And when they gave me the sheet of paper, it said Craig spelled wrong maize and it said female. So I think we have some quality control that to work on in the hospital. But I went back the next day after we opened the hospital, and you see the next slide. This is the lobby. And I sat in the back and took this picture, and for 2 hours, I knew this was going to happen. For 2 hours, I watched men and women, poor, sick, walking off that dusty road into that facility and watched them walk up to the counter and have someone take their name, take their information, and then they would have a seat. And then you can see that, like, that dark door there in the other door, those are doctors in there. And then when it was their time, someone would bring them in and sit them down, and the door would close, and a doctor would spend time with them and diagnose them, find out what their problem was. And there's a pharmacy that's there, and there's surgery rooms now, and there's a dental clinic, and it's amazing. And I sat there in the back and watched this, and that's when I remembered the story. I hadn't remembered that story for a long time, and I thought, 10 years ago, there was a woman who died on the side of the road because she couldn't get help. Look what God has done. Is he not a great God? Is he not an awesome God? Now, here's the part of the story where I tell you what an idiot I am. I went from that to a meeting. Some of our board members were there. We had a meeting with Jaya, and the discussion was about the hospital. Now that it's up and running, we have some real concerns about the expense of operating it and raising money. And I was sitting in there doing what I normally do, which was I'm looking at the wind, and I'm saying, oh my goodness, we can't do this. All the prices have escalated. It's going to be way too expensive. We built this building, and we're running it today, but what about next month and 3 months from now? There's no way we're going to have enough money. Those are my initial thoughts, and then God just stopped me because he's been teaching me from this passage, and he said, it sounds like you need to say, Lord, help me. And so I actually stopped the conversation, and I said, you know what? We need to pray, and we need to pray one simple prayer. Lord, help us. We got out of the boat. We're doing the impossible. We're walking on water, but we can't do this. We cannot do this on our own. You called us to do this. You're great enough, and so we're going to trust you. God, save us. And we prayed, God saved us. And I said, when I left that meeting, I said, I am not going to doubt anymore. I'm tired of doubting. I'm tired of fear gripping me. I'm tired of making decisions because I can't see the end of it. How can I have that experience in doubt? In fact, I want to put on the screen. Wait, don't put it up there yet. I got to tell you this. Greg, I hope you don't mind me telling this. Is Greg here? Okay, so we do this thing when mission teams goes. We do this thing called life tokens, and it's where you bring something with you that you're going to get rid of, and you're going to say goodbye to, and you're going to leave it behind and get a new start. And so Greg went first as a team leader, and he showed us this little Jesus statue. It was really tacky too, and he basically said, "I'm tired of believing in a little Jesus, because Jesus is big, and I'm gonna leave in India my little Jesus and trust that God is big and he can do anything." And that started the week off. So now, fast forward, later in the week, I didn't know exactly what I was going to do for my life token, and I had brought a card that I carried around in my Bible that showed what God had done in kind of the before and after. And so I want to put this on the screen and have you see this. So you can see the 2000, that's the piece of property that 4 years later looked like that. That's the orphanage that was built. And then in the lower corner, you've seen these two already. That was the property. This is now the hospital. And so for my life token, I showed that card to the group, and I said, I'm going to leave behind my doubt that I don't serve a God that can do this. I'm going to leave behind my fear. I'm going to choose to believe. I'm a man who wants to get out of the boat. I want to hear Jesus call me, get out of the boat. But when I get out of the boat and I'm walking, I want to understand that I'm not walking on the water because I'm all that or because I'm anything. I want to realize that I'm walking on water because I have an awesome God who created the world, who can do anything. And if I begin to doubt, I'm going to remember that I only have to say in that moment of doubt, Lord, save me. And that I am assured that he will reach down his hand and he will pull me up out of the water and he will rescue me. And so this hospital is going to be here 10 years from now and 20 years from now, and it's going to change that community for the glory of Jesus Christ. Is he able to do that? Absolutely. So here's my challenge to you. God is probably never going to call you to live in New York City, and I kind of pray that for you, okay? No, actually, that's not true, because where's Jeff? Yeah, Jeff came and visited us in New York a couple years ago, and I said, I want you as my worship leader. And then when Vineyard was started, I kind of loaned him to you guys for a while. But I want Jeff in New York, and you know, there's a few others that I've talked to. I want you in New York. But that will probably not be the call. God will probably not call you to go to India and be involved in starting a hospital. But maybe he will. Maybe it'll be 10 times more than that. The point is not that. The point is not my story. The point is your story. What is he doing in your life? What is he calling you to? Where is he stretching you? And where are you feeling the fear right now and the hesitation? I just want to challenge you tonight to trust him, to believe that you serve a big God, and that when you cry out to him in desperation, Lord, help me, that is the only time you'll ever feel his strength. Because if you're going to do it on your own and make it on your own, he'll let you do that. But when you get to the end of yourself, I guarantee you he's there to grab you and to pull you and to help you. And so I'm going to pray right now for that, for all of us, that we will experience the reality of his power and his provision in our lives. Lord, thank you for this story. It's really a crazy story when you think about it. A guy getting out of the boat and walking on water to you. And yet we're so encouraged by it, because we know that when you invite us to do something, when it's your invitation, if we follow you, it will be enough. There will be enough for us. You will provide for us. You will help us. And Lord, I pray tonight for the person here who, like Tony, is struggling with a serious illness, that they will feel your strong arm tonight. For the one who's out of work or is afraid of losing their job, that they will cry out to you in desperation, Lord, help me, and they will feel your strong arm. For the person who's in a marriage that's broken, the person that has a child who's away, whatever the situation is, you know, God, I just pray that they will find within themselves the ability and desire to simply cry out to you tonight, Lord, save me. And then they will feel that strength that comes from you. They will feel your strong arm holding on to them and rescuing them and assuring them and giving them peace and courage in the midst of their difficulty. Lord, just do a work tonight as we just for a moment in silence, allow the Holy Spirit to minister to you.